Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. That thing I doers, the thing I do debts and dudes. Those things we do.
That thing I do. You know, my homework this week is to figure out new names.
Yeah.
Because you've come up with all the good
ones.
They're
pretty easy. And again, I have to give proper credit to Mark Maron, who was the guy that kind of got me into podcasts in the first place. And his podcast is What the Fuck, so he says What the Fuckers, What the Fuckineers, you know, et cetera. Every kind of version pun of fuck, of which there are many, we have to be a little more clever. But yeah, that thing I do dudes, that thing I do debts, that thing I do wers.
That thing I do, you know, I really should be better at this.
That thing I duper fans.
That thing I, no, you know what? That's my homework for next week. I really have to sit down with myself and figure this out because I feel like you're winning right now and I'm losing.
I wouldn't have thought of it.
Yeah, you're winning.
You didn't make me do this podcast, so that is transferable to you. We are equal on the scoreboard.
That's true. I love that Darren is sitting and doing this podcast while eating. Can I blow your spot?
It's a great snack.
It's the cutest thing.
It's a great snack.
It's the cutest thing ever. Darren is eating apple slices. Are the cores in or out?
Who do you think I am? I cut the core out.
Oh, my God. Yes, you're for me. Cut core, apple slices with cinnamon. It is the cutest thing. It's so cute.
It's a nice low glycemic snack with no added sugar. It's just good food.
I would wager to say that apples are high on the glycemic index.
Is it?
But,
oh, you're
yes.
Right. I was thinking of nuts, so I fucked that up. Yeah, you would know about glycemic indexes more than anybody. What the fuck do I know?
Oh, I am well versed in the glycemic index. Well,
what am I thinking
versed.
Is low glycemic? Low glycemic is like almonds and shit, right?
Low GI is like, yeah. So things basically that the glycemic index essentially is like it measures the time that it takes. This is my understanding. It measures the time that it takes the sugar to, I guess, spike your blood sugar. That's how it was explained to me. So, for instance, orange juice, very high on the glycemic index because it raises your blood sugar as a type 1 diabetic very, very quickly. Like when I have a low blood sugar, I shoot OJ. I literally knock back a bottle of OJ. But things that are low on the glycemic index, like if you're thinking of fruits, like berries.
Berries. That's what it was. That's what it was. I fucked that up.
Raspberries.
Yeah, apples are a lot of shit. What am I talking about? Yeah, sorry. Thank you for correcting me. Thank you for illuminating me. I've been misusing that descriptor for a while. But it is no added sugar.
I'm never going to let you slide. No added sugar. That is true. And I applaud you for that. Thank you for being such an ally to the diabetic community. Yeah,
or people that just don't want to have, junk food. You know my junk food is because I'm not really a big sugar guy, at least added sugar dude. In general, I absorb all the really sweet fruits, you know, when I want a dessert treat, because I don't do like gummy
chocolate?
Snacks or chocolate. If I do chocolate, I'll go on another tip. I do the 100% cacao bitter and I'll have a fistful of that and then I'll work out. But I sound like such a fucking bro right now. But on the fruit tip.
Yeah, seriously, Darren.
Sorry, I know, it's gross. But I have to finish it so I can get out of it. I was going to say on the no sugar fruit thing.
No, I think it's because we were talking about that with
We were talking about working out with Reggie Watts.
We were talking about fitness.
Yes,
yes.
Who is our guest this week. Yes, we asked him about
I will accept
eating.
That you're talking about, having a fistful of cacao nibs and then pumping iron, that's okay.
And health and wellness is important. We talk about this. Some of our ad partners are all kinds of health and wellness. We'll talk about Care of in a little bit. But it's something that I'm interested. I'm interested what I put in the proverbial car, the proverbial Mini Cooper that is my life. I like putting the correct clean gas in its tank.
I think it's important to be healthy, but I think it's also important to be kind to yourself. And if you have a craving for something that might not be the best for you, you listen to your body.
Yeah.
And you eat it.
I agree.
Fine.
But I will say the thing that once you don't eat junk food for a long time, how like natural sweet things become on the level like of junk food, like your brain and body respond to it in the way that it would like a Snickers bar. Like I will say my, oh, fuck yeah. Oh, my God. Yes. Version of that are dates and figs. It's a very Mediterranean, yes. North African,
ooh.
Middle Eastern kind of thing. A good like date and like a fresh fig. Oh, forget about it. And some pistachios. Fuck.
Wow, you are
so good.
You are really you're
straight
letting your Mediterranean flag. Yeah,
I know.
You want to go to the Shook later,
dude?
Damn. Okay.
Sign me up. That shit is so.
Let's go to the Shook.
So good. I remember the first time I ever went to the Middle East and I had like a. I think it was in Qatar, because we say Qatar Airways. It's Qatar is how they pronounce it. I'm sure people fuck that all the time. But I was on Qatar Airways, and one of their lounges had like their pre-wrapped dates, which a pre-wrapped anything, you're like, oh, I'm sure this is a shitty date. It was one of the most delicious dates I'd ever had in my fucking life. Just because I was on that side of the world. I was like, this is where we get these delicious treats. I love dates.
It's the land of milk and honey.
It really is.
You know?
Ugh.
It really is.
So good.
But the closest thing that I've found to a Middle Eastern date is a California desert date on the way to Palm Springs.
Yep. Yeah, because desert, it's like a hot, I don't know the sort of ecology of it, but yeah, I guess it must have something to do with dry something.
Yes. But I think, there's a famous date farm. In the desert.
On the 10, you have all the signs that are like the famous date shakes or whatever. I know, and I always want to pull over and be like, give
me that. Do you
remember
what it's called?
No.
You've never been?
No, I always pass.
It's called Hadley's.
Hadley's.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. There was a...
Oh, my God. Hadley's, the best date, like the best date shake, maybe the best shake I've ever had. And they do a banana date shake.
Banana date, lethal combo. That's good.
It's so good, Darren. And that, like, I will save up my diabetes points while visiting Palm Springs. Like, I will be the pristine diabetic. I will make sure my blood sugars are as close to normal
high,
as possible.
Right?
Oh, and then I go off the rails and I have a date shake and my blood sugars are off the Richter scale for like 2 days.
But that's like natural sugars. But it's all sugar, so it doesn't really matter if it's like processed or not.
The
right?
shake... Well, no, the shake itself is already like is a no-fly zone.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But then you add the dates and the bananas, and it is a diabetic nightmare. But again, I'm an apt pupil, an amazing student.
You could do worse
world.
Than a date shake. It's not like you're getting a McFlurry. You know, you're doing. That's pretty healthy.
We can talk about this because it's deceptive. Basically, McFlurries and date shakes are the same thing. It's the same way that like a Kind bar, like a protein bar or a Kind bar.
You're talking about sugar content
for diabetics. Yeah, it's kind of the same thing. Like I remember going to my my endocrinologist when I was first diagnosed and thinking that I was being a good diabetic because I wasn't eating candy. I was eating like a Kind bar. I was eating a Kind bar. It had nuts and it had honey and it was all natural. And then my doctor asked me to check the nutritional content and compare it to a Snickers. And it was only off by like 6 grams of sugar. So it's essentially kind of the same.
It doesn't matter if it's processed or natural sugar. It's just sugar. Doesn't
it's
matter
still
what
sugar.
It's dressed up as. Oh, that sucks.
Exactly. So sugar is sugar. But, you know, I mean, and that's for diabetics. That's, you know, it's different for you people with a working pancreas.
Yeah. Man.
You people with a working pancreas, you know, it's a little different. But again, I will go with you to Hadley's. I will hop in my car right now.
There was a girl in grade school named Hadley that I loved. So now I go, man, it's a double whammy.
What? How old were you?
I was like, I mean, in grade school. I just remember she was like the quiet, pretty girl that didn't know she was pretty. I remember I had a crush on Hadley. But Hadley now maybe has a huge date empire, which is, I'm sure there's a joke in there
Get
somewhere.
Get in there, Darren.
I know. It's okay.
Get at her.
I'll just, you know, I can finally have a date with Hadley.
See, date with Hadley, or just free, you can ask her for a free date platter and then give them to all your friends and family for Christmas.
I don't think I'd give them to anybody. I would eat. I would lie and say it's for my family and they'd eat them all myself.
Now that I know that you're so obsessed with dates, I know what to get you for Hanukkah now.
Oh my God. Well, I'll never have enough dates in the house because they also stay for a long time. So like,
exactly, it's
the best like snack. I'll just have so many. But again, I'll still get like, that is sugar. Like I can get sick eating too many dates. Like my family's like go-to fruit and the most sweet thing in the world, it is the greatest fruit on the planet, is an actual mango. Like a real fucking mango.
Ooh.
Like I think Californians and people in the United States kind of forget. Like I remember Mia never, she's like, I don't really like mangoes. I was like, you never had a real mango. And I took her to the Philippines and not the starchy stuff that we have here after gets imported from wherever, Mexico or somewhere that closer to the equator. When you go to the Philippines and it's, you open a mango and it's like pudding. You put a spoon in. It's like, I can't even describe the joy. I mean, there's parts, it's not just the Philippines, all parts of, you know, the tropical areas and certainly parts of Mexico that have
really?
Amazing. Oh yeah. Like there's a difference that I think is staggering that I look forward to. If we're in that side of the world, Esty, I cannot wait to blow your mind. Hopefully not blow up your glycemic levels. Just a tiny bite. And you'll be like,
I don't want to die.
You'll be like, this is not what I thought a mango tasted like. It is very different.
Like pudding?
Like pudding.
I like the consistency.
It's
like so, pudding
it's
too?
It's so ripe that when you open it up, it's just like scooping out like a jello pudding kind of thing. It's so, not pudding,
what?
Not like that's not soft, not like a viscous soup. I'm just talking about like the way that the spoon can kind of carve into it in a very soft, buttery way. That's a real
mango. I imagine
mango.
Like a kiwi, if you will.
Maybe. I mean, I'll leave it to the imagination, but the point is it's the most delicious fruit in the world and one of my favorite things, and that's like the decadent. Oh my God, like if I was a diabetic, that would be a huge
I don't
issue
wish
for
diabetes
me.
On anyone. I think that it's I'm glad that you don't have it. I'm glad that you don't have it, and I hope one day,
but thank you for illuminating for me this. And other people, you know, thanks for being like, now that you're in the public eye, like an unintentional spokesperson and educator of that experience for people that, you know, now get to see parts of them in you rocking out on stage. Like, that's a cool thing. You know, it's not just Nick Jonas, guys.
It's not just Nick Jonas. And also, the other thing is, like, I don't wish it upon anyone, but I will say that it has brought me some of my best friends and it's brought me a sense of community because everyone in the type 1 diabetic community is so supportive of one another. So that I'm very thankful for. So having my diabuddies
that's really good.
Has been great. And meeting people on the road that are diabetic has always been something really cool. And it's nice to feel like I'm not so alone on the road when I'm meeting other people that are dealing with the same
thing. Is there a candy that you liked as a kid that like you miss?
Oh my God. Reese's Pieces.
Oh
yeah,
that's your thing. Chocolate peanut butter. Me too. I love that. I thought, because some people are more chocolatey. Some people more candy, you know, like Jolly Rancher, like Starbursty kind of stuff. I'm more chocolatey.
Yes.
So I'm with you. Reese's for sure. A dark chocolate Reese's.
Reese's Pieces.
Freezer.
And then I still, in the freezer, and my mouth still starts watering a la Pavlov's Bell when I think about Warheads.
Oh, you like that sour thing. You like Sour Patch Kids?
See, I'm
wow.
already.
Wow. Yeah, I don't have that, but I can
saliva.
Appreciate that for sure.
I mean, I liked them.
What was your favorite? I like the cherry one, the black cherry Warheads. Those were fun.
Black cherry Warheads and the blueberry.
Oh, yeah. Those were actually fun. I like those too.
I didn't like the lemon ones. The lemon one was like
also
too
the payoff
much sour.
Wasn't fun because the whole point was to get past the sour to get to this really sweet thing. And if you have lemon, it's like sour and then more sour.
No, like, and then like no one likes the. I don't think no one really loves like the lemon Starburst.
Yeah,
too,
I don't.
Right?
I don't dislike. Oh, dude, I have a crazy story for you that Mia and I found when we were in Japan. So you know how ever have okay? So it's a very divisive flavor, grape Jolly Rancher. Do you like it or do you not like it?
I can do without it.
You can do without it. I happen to love it. This seems to be very like it's very like up or down, right? Some people hate it. Some people love it. I like the Jolly Rancher flavor. This is a synthetic grape flavor. It's what Dimetapp tastes like. It's the taste of a lot of grape tasting things. I'm using quote fingers. And for my whole life, I was like, this isn't what grapes taste like because I know what grapes taste like. I have my California grapes and the grape Jolly Rancher is a different flavor. Like this is what happens when they synthesize a flavor. That's not real grape. A few years ago, I'm sitting in the mountains of Nagano, Japan, right? I'm having breakfast. Okay. And they have fresh fruit out. And they have these big, big, like beautiful, almost cartoonish looking grapes, purple grapes. I'm just talking to Mia and we're having breakfast and I pop one in my mouth and I just go, oh my God, this is what a grape flavored Jolly Rancher tastes like. And then I realized in that moment that the people who chemically engineer the candy flavor of grape were mimicking the actual taste of grape just from an Asian province, from Japan. I don't know if it tastes the same way in other parts of that side of the world.
Really? Yeah.
And I realized, oh my God, this is the grape that they were doing, because let's pretend maybe that was manufactured in Japan. I don't know. Chemically engineered in Japan. So they were like, they were on the nose. I thought it was a fake flavor. Like, oh, Jolly Ranchers don't actually taste like grape. They actually do. Just not grapes in California. Just not grapes in the United States. But there are grapes in the world that actually taste like.
So
it blew
crazy.
My fucking mind, Esty. I was like, this whole time, I thought that I was like convoluting my sense of what grape tastes like. No, there are real grapes out there that taste like Jolly Ranchers, not the other way around. Isn't that crazy?
This whole conversation is making me want to try every fruit that we have in America and try it on that side of the world.
Yeah, see what it's mimicking.
First, now you're telling me mangoes.
Oh yeah, totally different thing.
Aren't mangoes, and now you're telling me grapes aren't grapes.
Well, it's true of the world. It's like you have everything is different. There's different versions of things.
Everything
in different
is
places.
Different.
Everyone's truth is different.
Well, I want to try
it
now.
Hey, listen.
Now I want to go. Should we? Let's go,
all right.
Darren.
All right, we got to go.
Darren.
Esty, I got to start walking. We got a long way to go. who was our guest this week? We said Reggie Watts is with us. It turns out that you actually had already met Reggie. I thought maybe I was throwing a guess that I had some pull on. I didn't. I find this out in the interview. What a fascinating guy. You could tell my fandom of him, you know, a dude who is like, he's just great at everything. Fabulous musician. He's a funny dude. He's a great impressionist. He's got such a masterful gift of improvisation. All the stuff that I really, really admire. And you can hear me going off on it. I'm glad you kind of broke it up a little bit.
Well, he's just really
just like fucking mouth off the entire time.
Well, I mean, I wasn't really talking that much because I'm very intimidated by him.
Shut up. No, you're not.
I swear, I am. He's so, this is the thing. I'm intimidated by people that are good musicians and are funny. Like, if you make me laugh, like what Marilyn Monroe, I mean, the infamous quote, if you can get a girl to laugh, you can get her to do anything.
Yeah, I forgot. I think I've heard that one. Yeah, yeah.
It's very true. It's very true. At least in my world, like if you can make me laugh, I'm probably going to want to hang out with you all the time. And which is also why I'm here. You make me laugh. I wanted to do a podcast with you. So with Reggie, it's kind of the same thing. I mean, I started to kind of, when we were interviewing him, I didn't want to go like too deep into our origin story. But I do remember just like looking, like watching him do his, like, it was like a tight five before the show started. And I was like, oh, this guy's really cool. He's really funny. I want to be his friend, but how do I? Like, how do I, like, what do I do? Just go up to you and go, like, I think you're cool? Like, I didn't know what to do. So I waited until I played.
Right.
Because I was like, then at least I can kind of, like, be like, oh, I just played. Instead of being like, oh, I'm playing today. And have, you know, have him be like, oh, big deal. So we're like 10,000 other bands that are playing this festival. But I was like, you know, I played, and then, you know, he happened to be on the side stage. And then, you know, just kind of like, it was this really natural thing. We got off stage and, you know, he was just kind of backstage and we started talking. And I was like, oh, yeah, this guy's really cool. I really hope we can be friends. He's really awesome.
I mean, that's the way that I feel like we get to kind of, you know, put our hand up. And I don't want to say prove ourselves, but I guess it is proving ourselves, you know, like it's one thing to be like, I love you. You mean a lot to me. I want to give back to you in some way to where you can hopefully see me the way that I see you, or a fraction of the way that I see you. And what's cool about getting in a position where you're playing music with them, or you're acting with them, or you're doing something that is similar to the thing that they put out. It is like it's a way for them to see you, you know, in every sense of the word.
Right.
And so well, that's yeah. a great, yeah, I totally am with that because it's like, it's either
I want to be a peer.
Yeah.
I want to be your peer.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to be us to be able to like relate to each other on the same level. So that's why my plan was like, okay, well, at least like perform and you can be like, and you can have the confidence of knowing like, yes, I belong here.
Right.
I do belong. I have a reason for being here because I'm playing in this show and, you know, but I was still intimidated. That didn't go away. But at least I could have the armor of, okay, like I can be in my power for a second and be like, okay, I do have a right to be here. I play bass. I sing songs. We're going to have fun. And then hopefully maybe he hears about the performance or maybe he sees the performance and be like, oh, yeah, that, you know, that the bass player and that, you know, that band of sisters.
Yeah, we smell around.
Yeah, they were great.
It's given him an opportunity to kind of like, yeah, again, smelling the scent of the pack, you know, like, oh, OK, she's in the club. I mean, that's how I feel, too. I mean, I feel like when I get intimidated or really excited, I motor mouth a little bit. I try, which I kind of you can hear in the interview. Even though
No, you killed it. You were great.
Thank you.
I go the opposite. I tend to just kind of get really like quiet and I just observe, but probably not the best thing for a podcast. So I'm going to work on that.
No,
intimidated by our guests.
Well, cause sometimes I'll sit by, it's like, listen, we're a tag team. We kind of got to feel the flow. It's like being a musician.
That's true.
You got to know when to add the pieces and when to sit back and. It's all about cadence, man.
And I feel like we should get into it. I really like this
Let's get into it with Reggie Watts. Great musician, great dude, and so lovely to join us. Let's hear what he has to say about all the things.
On That Thing I Do podcast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, we're here. Hey, bud, thanks for joining us.
Hey.
Where have you been?
Where have I been? You mean today?
This is maybe my Reggie Watts question.
Oh.
Take it as you will. This is,
gotcha.
Is it a metaphysical question? Is it a literal question? Where have...
It's both. It's both.
We've been, yeah.
It's, yeah, it's literal physical. Where have I been? I went to the gym. There we go.
Oh. That's good. Are you a gym guy? Are you like a fitness dude?
Well, I mean, like all the Heim sisters, like I'm just like constantly working out. Like, and so, yes.
I wish that was true, Reggie. Actually, what? No, not true at all. I like my version of physical fitness is I will bike around my neighborhood while my boyfriend is running. So I'm like his, I look like his coach. I look like his coach, keep it going. Don't stop.
You know what? In fairness, that is working out there.
Technically.
The verb and the preposition are both correctly used.
Here's the thing. Reggie's making it seem like I'm a gym rat or my sisters are gym rats. Also,
I think he was just being charming.
Absolutely not. But I appreciate it. I mean, look at these guns. Look at these guns. But that's from bass playing, honestly.
Yeah, that's true. Bass playing. Yeah.
That's from playing.
Well, I mean, yeah, bass shoulders and arms are, you know, you can't duplicate that in the gym.
That's what I look for. That's what I look for in people is base, shoulders, and arms.
Yeah, base, shoulders, and arms.
Shoulders and
shoulders,
arms
knees,
is
and
my
toes.
Main my main criteria. Yes, that is what I look for.
Is it offset? Is it just like your left side? Is this more powerful than the other side? Depending on if you're a left or righty.
No, it's equal because I don't know if Darren. I don't know if you've ever seen me play the bass, but
no.
It's aggressive. It's a workout, and so my whole body, but especially from the waistline or the equator up, there is a lot of aggression being
exerted. Have all seen it. We definitely know.
Yes. So
Reggie
it is,
knows.
Tis
I know.
A workout. Tis a workout. I know. Reggie saw the first festival I ever played.
What?
Reggie was there.
Gentleman of the Road.
I met Reggie in 2012 when we played and Haim played the Gentleman of the Road tour. And the way I remember it is Reggie was the MC of said festival. And I remember I'd never met him before. And I remember watching him and lulling and then scheming in my brain, like, how am I going to be friends with this person? Because I don't have any other friends on this tour other than my sisters. And he seems really cool. It was intimidating. It was like St. Vincent. And like, we knew no one.
All right. I'm just going to stop you right here. Reggie, yeah, so for crazy. The past couple of weeks, we've had guests. We had Maya Rudolph. We had the Haim sisters. We had Evan Rachel. We had some people that for the most part, Esty had, like, she brought to the table. And this time I was like, you know what? I'm going to try and pull my weight. Try and pull somebody that perhaps Esty has never met. But Esty knows fucking everybody, apparently. And okay, I guess you guys met in 2012. Yet again, cool people beget cool people. I just can't avoid it. I thought I had an edge.
No,
I'm
you do.
My edge.
No, Darren, you do. My question is, that's my recollection of meeting Reggie, and he still hasn't confirmed whether or not he likes me or not. And he still wants to be my friend.
Well, that's why we're here.
So I'm waiting.
Now or never.
The time is a ticking, Reggie.
Well,
I defer to you.
We'll find out by the end of this podcast.
God damn it.
Well, no.
I'm still trying to be Reggie's friend since 2012.
Yeah. I mean, come on. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm friends with any bass player, like in general, but you and specifically, I mean, come on.
Thank you.
You know, like no one plays bass like you do. No one does bass face like you do.
Oh, I'll take
Nobody it. Nobody does it better.
Better. Thank you
Nobody quite
for that.
Like, yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
I
want to put on the scoreboard. We got one Marvin Hamlish. We're going to see how many other Hamlishes we can get during the course of this interview.
Nice.
Before you were here, we were already singing that other song from Chorus Line. So he's currently got two on the board, actually. We'll see what other composers get.
Yeah, we were singing a chorus line.
Today for the Martin Hamlish Challenge, Reggie Watts has already dropped one Marvin Hamlish song.
Do you think me and Hamlish are related?
You know what? Let's not the truth get in the way of a good story. Let's just assume.
Because
nobody does it better.
Well, when you think about it, right? Because...
And
Ellis, I have to believe that like somewhere we probably had the same last name and mine just got chopped off somewhere, the end of mine.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
See what I mean?
Marvin Haimlish. Yeah, I'm sure somewhere in Staten Island.
Is it spelled H-A-I-M-L something, something, something?
It could be, but there were a lot of gatekeepers, you know, when people were coming into this country, famously changing the things and making it easier to spell. So who knows?
Well, maybe my name was definitely changed. So I'm going to go with we're related.
You could be. Yeah, Hamlish, if he was alive, he'd definitely be on this show. Because Reggie, I have to welcome you because you fit the bill. You know, we like to have multi-hyphenates on the show. Essie and I both being performers and musicians of types. And you kind of straddle the line between a lot of different things for our listeners that don't really know your background. I've always been very effusive about how much I adore you, how much I've followed you over the years. And, you know, you're kind of this template of one of these guys that... kind of keeps people guessing, you know, that has a lot of different skill sets. And this can be a blessing and a curse for people that like to do a lot and have an ability to accomplish a few different things because audiences are always going, well, what box can I put them in? My brain needs to categorize things so I can make my life easy. But it's just not as simple as that. So so welcome, man. Thanks for joining us. It's fucking cool that you're here and that we've already given one Marvin Hamlish song shout out. You're in the club.
Pleasure.
So Max, let me go back for a second. So you're at the gym, you're working out. Are you a fitness at home guy? Are you a gym like gym dude? And I say that I'm also a fitness nerd. I'm like a because I think musician and fitness thing doesn't always go hand in hand. But
no,
I am
no,
that guy.
That's definitely not true. Yes, that yeah. I mean, it's you know, it depends on what bracket you're in sometimes, like with music, you know, like some of it is like self-destruction is part of the lifestyle, you know,
right? Yeah.
But it doesn't, you know, it doesn't have to be, you don't have to sacrifice your body. But I would say, like, you know, for me, as I was getting older, you know, touring really killed me. I put on so much weight touring. I was like 60 pounds overweight. And then when I got to LA, I was like, you know, I don't want to be that way anymore. I'd been like super fit twice, like three times in my life, before that time period. So I had it in me. But I just kind of let things go. And so, yeah, once I got to LA, I started, you know, I got a trainer and started working out. And And now I just, even though I'm not like at my, I still gained some pounds during COVID or whatever, at least I'm still working out 4 times a week and I still have my cardiovascular, like I feel good. I just have the extra weight, but I'm just, and now I'm just like in that Hollywood, like I'm not going to look in a mirror today. It's like, oh, these pants are a little tighter. You know, like I'm definitely, I have that, that kind of thing going on. But ultimately I have to just be really happy for my health, you know, that I can walk and I can breathe and my heart functions and all that stuff, you know, because I mean, without any of that, life doesn't really matter.
I'm with you. That's a thing that I kind of came around to in like my late 20s where I think because, especially if you're an actor, working out is equated to like looking good with a minimal amount of clothes on. And I reached a point where I was like running up a flight of stairs and I wanted to fucking jump off a cliff. And I was like, wait a second. I need my heart to function properly. I need to be able to live life without it being miserable. Because these stairs weren't even that hard. And I was like, fuck trying to have like a six pack. Like, as my brother famously once said, he at the time he had 2 kids. He has more kids since then, but he was looking at his children and I was in really good shape at the time. And he looks at me and he goes, man, even if I had a six pack, the fuck would I do with it? And I was like, you're right. What does it matter? He's like, I want to be healthy, be able to like, you know, not have my heart want to explode and have my blood pressure be all right. So I'm with you, man.
Yeah, man.
It's not the vanity, it's the sanity.
No, we want you around, not the vanity, but the sanity. That is so true.
Right here. And, you heard it here.
And we want Reggie Watts to be around for the next 100 years. So
we do.
Cheers.
I would love that.
Me too, man.
Thank you. And to you guys as well. I mean, you guys are all amazing, amazing, incredible performers. It's like, I mean, you know, and more than that, but, you know, but like for people out there that see what you do, like that's, those are important things. And not only that, but like, you know, for real people, like real deal people, like there's a lot of people that are out there. I was actually just thinking about this. There's a lot of people out there, a lot of performers that I'm like, yeah, that's great. You know, they're doing their thing. It's great. But there's a type of performer that puts something into what they do, an artist that puts something into what they do that actually expands something for people that are listening to it because there's an undeniable amount of talent, you know, and there's a lot of people out there people are like, dude, that person's so rad. And I'm like, yeah, they're okay. But like, I need some magic. You know what I mean? That's like, you know, so like Doja Cat is like a person that I just, you know, kind of discovered from a friend a few months ago. And I was like, what is going on now? I mean, like, I was like, I would take, this is going to be controversial, but I'm like, not this competition. It's not, this is just me. Like, if I had to like choose somebody to like listen to and to follow their career musically, I would choose Doja Cat over like Beyonce, any of those people, just because she's creating what you're seeing. And she's an insane dancer, an incredible singer, so imaginative, also an amazing MC and a beat maker. I mean, she's like everything happening at once.
She's so talented.
Dare I say, you may or may not have described Doja Cat the way that I would describe you.
You.
Reggie Watts.
Totally.
I think you may have accidentally projected the thing that you want to accomplish succeed in accomplishing in being mirrored by people that you want to see doing the same thing. And this is something that I've always really admired about you and a bunch of performers that I have in my life that I get to meet and be very inspired by. You were just talking about people who kind of put their, you're creating what you're seeing, and that has largely to do with that artist utilizing all the things that are extraordinarily unique to them. I think Haim does a wonderful job of this, mainly because it's times three of the same bloodline, embracing a thing that makes them unique. So when they sing together, it's like the fucking Bee Gees, because you have the same literal genetic vocal timbre sounding like magic. And you have somebody like you that has all these skills that has managed to put it all in one place. Like, you're a funny guy and you're a good musician, but it's nice when you see those things come together in a way that not everybody can fucking do. And that is such a cool thing. And so I guess I'm just reverting that compliment that you were giving to Doja Cat to yourself. And I'm going to bring this back. You were saying you were on tour for many years, right? And you were, where you're doing the tour gut. I get that one. I know it very well. I think so does Esty. Let's go back for a little bit for listeners that don't know, because on the show, we kind of take people who we think on a wider scale might know somebody for one thing, but there's so many other things going on. That thing I do is about the many other things that we do. And, you know, you have a rich history in music. And when you were touring, are you talking about, I know you did, you had like a funk group back in the day. Was this your own stuff? Was this as a comedian? Was this as music? What were you, what tour were you talking about?
Well, there was when I first left Seattle, I moved out to New York in like 2003 to pursue comedy. And
Seattle wasn't for school?
Seattle was, no, I was, well, kind of. I moved to Seattle in 1990. And then I played in shitloads of bands, and then I decided to go to school. I moved there for the Art Institute, but I quit after 6 months. But then I started playing in shitloads of bands, and then I decided to study jazz voice at Cornish. And so I did 2.5 years there. I didn't graduate. I just was kind of there for the experience. And then that was all my schooling. Then the rest of it was just me being in jam bands and all kinds of manner of music. But really, and I toured, but it wasn't like hardcore touring. It was just like little stints here and there. When I moved to New York and started doing comedy, once that picked up, I started traveling a lot, you know, going to Edinburgh, and then like, and then from Edinburgh, you know, maybe I'd pick up a gig in Germany, and then, you know, Scandinavia or whatever. And I started touring around, going to Australia. Then I started doing all the, and it was just nonstop, like micro tours.
As you, you know, as Reggie Watts.
All the time. As Reggie Watts, just me moving through whatever the world. And during that time, that was about, I'm going to say that was probably like a solid 7 years after I moved there. And during that time, you know, I remember going to South Africa, Cape Town, wow, for Design Indaba, which is, wow, insane. Brian Eno, for some, whatever reason, well, we met at Pop Tech. But Brian Eno, once he met me and saw me, he really liked what I did. And he invited me to 5 festivals that he curated throughout like the 2 years, plus having me play at his daughter's birthday party at his house in Oxfordshire.
What?
For both daughters.
You played Brian, yeah, Eno's daughter's birthday? What a trip.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, my God. You wouldn't believe it, man. I mean, it's like, I'm telling you, like, all this shit that happened during that time, it's like, people are like, what? Like, you know, like me going playing for his daughter's setting up my gear, like, plugging in the sound system and everything.
He's got his daughter's runway.
Yes, totally.
That,
yeah,
is,
his daughter's
funny.
Like, are, they're engineers, like they know music, and so like, they're like
he's like, you have to tech your own birthday party. I'll get you,
yeah,
I'll get you Reggie Watts, but you're the hired tech for the day.
Totally, 100%. I mean, I was like, is this really happening? And then like, you know, spend the night in their like little cute one of their rooms in his like cute guest house, and then in the morning, Brian's making me breakfast. He's singing Stop. Songs with his brother, playing guitar. They're singing together, and then he gives me a ride to the fucking airport for my next tour date. Like, I just, wow, like Brian was the shit.
That sounds like an acid dream to me. Sounds like a full-blown.
Yeah. I think people have totally had that acid dream, but they were, yeah, probably astral projecting into your actual experience.
Yes.
That's what I am. I'm a surrogate.
Yeah, you're a surrogate.
It'll take off
four
my face
people's
plates.
Acid trips.
I am a surrogate.
Sign me up. I want in there. I want a piece of that life. I want being Reggie Malkovich. That sounds great.
That's insane.
Isn't that insane? So, all that to say is, when he invited me to Design Indaba, South Africa, and when I flew down there, that's kind of when I started going a little crazy on food, because I've always been like kind of a chubby kid. I was a chubby kid growing up, and I really relied on food for comfort. You know, this is a very common problem. But when I went to, as soon as I landed, the jet lag and all that stuff, I was just like, ah, fuck it, I'll just order. They've got weird hamburgers here. I better try them, you know, and just, yeah, just be like trying late night hamburgers, all the free food, and like, you know, sitting around at a, you know, a whatever luxury hotel shit, and then, you know, flying and eating all the food on first class. Like, it was just like, you know, I was like, oh, I'm in first class, I can do it, you know. And I just,
yeah, they're
went
giving
crazy.
They're asking me to eat this often. I don't,
yes,
want to be rude.
No, you can't be rude. You gotta, you know, you gotta go fit into the lifestyle. So, you know, and I was doing that without having any, you know, active elements in my life at all. So I just ended up gaining a lot of weight, because you just get comfortable. It's just the luxury of touring. Once you get to a certain level of touring, and not that I was like at a high level, but I wasn't being invited, you know, to cool things, and they would like just build in that experience.
Also, it's
so,
just
you.
You
know,
that's an important qualifier, that it's just
true.
You, as opposed to being a group of guys, group of girls. It's like, if it's all, like all of that, now the writer now just goes to one person. That doesn't have to be split.
Right.
So, yeah, I could definitely see that being an issue. I mean, I'm like such a pig on tour.
No, yeah, touring and food is,
oof,
brutal.
It is, isn't it?
It's brutal. And I mean, I'm sure you can relate to the idea of like doing a show and like finishing at like 11 or midnight and then being so fucking hungry.
Yep.
and there being nothing open, mm-hmm. like except like Domino's,
yep,
or like the like bar food, so like burgers, and you're kind of at the mercy.
No way out of it.
Yeah, you're kind of at the mercy of what's open, and like, and also the dead end that I ran into was I was like, okay, then I'm just gonna order the food before. And I'm going
to
order something
smart,
healthy.
Though. I've had to learn how to do that, too. You got to get
but
it before.
But could you
then
do it? I was like, I don't want to eat a salad right now. I don't, I'm not going to want a salad.
Yeah, it's tough.
I know when I get off stage, it's
now.
Like, give me beer and fat and burgers.
Exactly. And give me carbs. And then as a type 1 diabetic, being on the road.
Oh, fuck.
And, yeah. And then, like, you know, my blood sugar would be, T1D. So, like, I would finish the show. I would scarf down a whole pizza to myself and then go to bed. And my blood sugar were just, it was like colossus. It was like, and then I would wake up the next day and feel like shit and dehydrated because my blood sugar was high all night. And then I'd have to do a show. So it's touring is definitely grueling. It's the thing that I love more than anything in the world. I wouldn't be able to do anything else. There's nothing more fun than touring, but it's definitely not.
That's like 30 times as hard for you though. Reggie and I are like, oh man, we love food. It's hard, you know, on tour. And like, yeah, I have a condition that actually makes it 50 million times more of an issue.
Yeah.
But it's for everyone, right? It's for everyone that's touring, not just people with type 1 diabetes, but like, it's just not the most conducive thing to your health because you're also, you know, no offense to, you know, Nebraska or other states surrounding Nebraska.
Wyoming. Yeah.
Right. But there's just not like the healthiest of foods are not really at your disposal. It's not like living in LA or New York where, you know, the health conscious are aplenty and abound and it's easy to get healthy food wherever you are. But when you're kind of in the middle of nowhere, the health food is like Subway.
I'm gonna put a pin in my middle of tour story because Reggie's here and I wanna ask him some questions.
Yeah.
But I will
sure.
I have to tell you guys this. I'm sorry, I have to. It's just too good. Even though I guess my name's on this podcast too. I have to say it. So there was a famous night where it was like one of my first tours. Same thing, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, we finally get on the road. It's one of these long hauls between, I want to say like, it was like somewhere in Cincinnati. We were driving through Kentucky or something. We're all fucking starving. And, we just all collectively go, hey man, do you mind just like, we don't care. Like there's a taco. Oh, like fuck yeah. Taco Bell. Great. Fuck yes. We see one in the distance, like, you know, like this angelic iconic sign of the bell there to save us from our hunger and our drunkenness. And so we pull up to it and it says drive through only. And we go, okay, that's fair. And we pull the bus up and realize the bus is too large to go in the drive through.
Yeah.
So we get out of the bus and we knock on. And it's like 2 in the morning. They probably thought we were, you know, fucking, you know, like crazy, like drug addicts. I don't know. Who knows? Like, so we're like knocking on the door like crazy zombies, going like, hey, is there a way we can, because you're open. I know it's drive through only. But the bus pointing at the big thing, it can't go through and trying to like gesticulate the scenario. And they're saying, no, like drive through only, you can't come in. And so I don't know where this, there's video footage of this.
Oh, God.
Of the four of us, four or five guys miming perfectly straight faced. You can't see it because this is a podcast.
Yes.
Like pretending like we're in a car.
No.
And we pulled up to the thing, we rolled down the window. And we said, hi, yes, so, hey, keep it down. And, like, you know, trying to reach to people in the back. And we perfectly mimed. Yeah. And I remember my quads, you know, because we're all kind of squatting, like squat walking.
Burning, man.
Through the thing. And we successfully ordered drive-through in a magical, invisible car. They gave it to us. And so there's video somewhere from 2011, 2012 of just five or four knuckleheads pulling up at 3 in the morning at some Taco Bell outside of, like, rural Kentucky. And we successfully got our Crunchwrap Supremes. That's all. That's the adventures from touring.
See, what I would have done is I would have just gotten into someone else's car. But I don't know how safe that is either.
You know, just give someone some money and just throw this on your order. You know what I mean?
Hey, but I don't want to. Yeah. But also, you miming and you guys utilizing your theater school training is also.
Yes.
I'm sure you guys probably had to do that at Michigan.
Oh, yeah. Be the cars.
Extra credit.
I wanted to ask Reggie, because Esty and I have a significant background in theater, and you know, a lot of what you do has a large degree of theatricality to it, and that's,
yes,
we can define that word however it, whatever it means. But oftentimes there's a lot of musicians that had backgrounds as actors or vice versa. And was there any point, like, did you do theater in school? Did you ever have any interest in acting? Because, you know, in a way you are acting when you're putting a lot of these pieces as a performer. So I don't know. Did you ever study that stuff? Was that ever something you wanted to do?
You know, I guess, you know, the funny thing is, I think what kind of brings all these different elements together for me is, like, as a kid, I was a mimic. So I loved, you know, if I saw, you know, Masterpiece Theater, you know, and the host doing his hosty thing, and then seeing people, you know, just like, where are you going? I don't know. But everything I've said is true. Why? Why do you do this? Charles, please, not now. There's a sound. Quickly. Here he comes. You know, all that stuff. Like, I was just, as a kid, like, ooh, hey, you know, like, just. Like,
yeah, I totally playing, get playing. That.
And I was an only child, too. So I was like, you know, action figures and like making up whatever. So for me, the rule was any way to get up on some form of a stage, like, I'm down for it. So
it was in you. It was always in you.
Always in me. Like I loved doing things that I knew could bring people into the way I'm seeing something, hopefully, you know, and thereby being somewhat, you know, like I want people to join in on this imaginary journey, you know, that type of thing. And when I was in, when I was in elementary school, I convinced my principal, I was like, can I throw a noontime special play?
Oh my God.
And he let me do it. And so the way I sold it is I told him that it would be a play, an anti-drug play, because this was the 80s. So Nancy,
just
Ray,
say no.
Reagan.
Very
just say no.
To say no. Yeah.
No, it's like you just say no. Everyone's doing it. So so I wrote this play about me being a police officer and like busting, you know, some guy with drugs, and I like remember putting a bunch of flour in a Ziploc bag and a bunch of parsley in a Ziploc bag. Yeah. And then I just like had this thing where I ended up busting this kid. I don't know if it was any good, but all the school was there to see this dumbass play. You know, so I did that.
And then
it was fun. It was like, it was really cool. But I loved that rush, you know, of basically just playing, but in front of people. And then in junior high, I did a little bit. And then in high school, I did competitive dramatics. So my first year, I did
like, some schools call it like speech and debate, right? It's kind of part of that.
It's similar.
Yeah.
Similar, but it's truly like drama. So it's
dramatic
the same,
interpretation. This, yeah.
Yeah. There's like some people do call them, there's extemporaneous, which is kind of similar to kind of improv solo type of stuff. But, yeah, it's like a similar system. It's like a different, it's like the same overlay, but it's just the content is a little bit different, but it's the same like five kind of categories. And there were only two states that did it at the time that had competitive dramatics. It was us and Texas, I think.
Reggie, can you give me an example? Because I have absolutely no idea what this is.
Really?
It
depends
yeah.
what school you went to. A lot of schools had different names for this. I also didn't have what you're talking about, but I've met enough people who have been part of this like ecosystem of like dramatic interpretation or again speech and debate and all these different subcategories where it was basically just semantics for like kids who like theater and like to perform doing a version of their
it was like monologues it was like a monologue
kind of it's like so the five categories were humorous solo, serious solo, serious duo and then kind of physical acting, which could be like mime or you know things of that, clowning, that kind of a thing, right? And then I did humorous solo. So you're supposed to pick a piece. Like I think it's like 10 minutes long, 10 or 12 minutes long.
Whoa, you pick a piece. That's a lot of words.
Yeah, it is a lot of words. But I think it might have been 10 minutes. But I just remember like you had 10 minutes. You had this scene that you would do that you pick. But I asked if I could improvise. My teacher, my coach, my drama coach, Mrs. Thiel, was really, really cool. And she was like, yeah, go for it. And so I did my own kind of improvised hodgepodge of like Eddie Murphy's Bill Cosby impersonation. Like
yes.
That's how I was doing Bill Cosby.
Which for and our then, listeners who aren't then, like, familiar, during that time, that was a very funny thing to be acknowledging. You know?
Yes. Oh my God.
Because you have the hottest comedian alive roasting
yes.
at the time a very famous figure. So let's, before anybody convolutes that...
Yes.
That history.
Different time.
Just a
it was a different
context.
Time.
Different time. Anyway, continue, Reggie.
Cosby was king at that point. Cosby that was like the Cosby time. Show. All that, yes. Everybody was like, holy shit, Cosby. You know, I mean, he was like doing some really cool shit. But, you know, behind the scenes, not so much. Anyways, yes. But we did. But so I was doing like that. And then I was a huge Monty Python fan. So I was doing Monty Python British stuff. So I was always speaking in an English accent like half of my life. And so I mixed all that stuff and just the thing. And then, you know, and you have meets. And then finally there's the, you know, the finals or whatever. And I got third that year. And then the second year I did Humorous Duo with my friend Wally Bossy. And we did this thing called like a sketch thing called Two Guys Doing Stuff. And we just, again, we had like an improvise. We had a framework and things that would go in order, but we'd kind of fill it with improvisation. And we won state that year, which was like insane because we won over Billings West, which was like the legendary school.
This is in Montana?
Montana. This is all Montana. Yeah. 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 So it was like, it was kind of crazy. Like it was like a high school movie. Like there, I will write a high school movie about competitive drama, about that year and how we beat the top school. We took three of the five categories of the top school that usually swept everything.
Clean sweep. It was dope.
Your trophy is, or plaque or whatever I imagine is somewhere shined on a regular basis at your high school in Montana. I'm sure people walk by it all the time and say, that was Reggie Watts.
The happy mask, sad mask, like the happy face mask and the sad face mask.
Yes.
Well, that checks out.
It was that.
That checks out that you did theater. Yeah, that's so it's all kind of tied together because I always think it is all the same music, theater, act. It's all performance and it's all part of the same like genome.
It really is. And I loved being on stage in drama. The thing that I was terrible at was memorizing lines. So for me, it was like if I had a framework and I could improvise within it, then I was pretty happy. Or if I just had minimal lines, you know, that was okay. And then when I moved to Seattle in the mid-90s, I did sketch comedy, started a sketch comedy group with a couple of these brilliant actors that were going to the University of Washington. We did two different sketch groups there. And then when I went to New York, I got into experimental theater and did wrote seven pieces. And we were at Under the Radar Festival and performed a couple of times around the world as well. So it was... Yeah, I had a lot of theater experience. I love
so,
theater.
So when did they kind of come together? Because I'm really happy to hear this because we have a very similar kind of pathway where you know, I was always playing music and I was always doing theater. And there was a point in college where church and state were kind of separated because I didn't do musical theater. I loved musical theater, but like I would do silly music with my silly music friends. And then I would do like plays and shit. And I just, they never converged until... One year somebody said, hey, we're doing like a silly musical. Could you write songs for that? And I was like, I guess, yeah, that sounds fucking funny. I'll do that. And that's when they kind of converged and things kind of came from that. But for you, was there a moment where, again, you're doing music your whole life, you have this musical ability and you're a great improviser. But, you know, a lot of the material that I first got hip to was because of a lot of your musical improvisation. Was there a moment that you realized these two had a place? Did somebody ask you? When was the pivot? When would they come together? Do you even know?
I would say I was kind of always doing it because of Weird Al, you know.
Fuck yeah.
When I was, you know, I mean, when I saw Eat It, that like,
oh man,
it blew my world wide open because I was like, how can you take song that popular now, make version, and then video look real similar?
Does not compute.
Song sound similar? Does not. How can do that? You know, like it was just like very. Just mind blowing. And I started writing parody songs. You know, I did my own version of Beat It called Clean It, which was not that great. But, you know,
valiant
I did
effort.
It. And,
valiant effort.
Yeah.
A but for effort.
Yeah, it was valiant. Yeah. I thank you. I, you know, but I'd always like, you know, thought of like silly versions of songs or I'd change lyrics to songs all the time. And then, when I would improvise, I started improvising like after, you know, because I took classical piano until about age 16, 5 to 16. And after that point, you know, I would kind of doodle around and I would morph songs I was supposed to learn and other things. And I started adding lyrics. So I kind of have always been doing it, you know, kind of like everything that I do on stage as a solo artist now is what I was doing in high school in serious solo or in humor solo.
Wow. Then when was because we talked a lot on the last couple of shows when we'd have musicians around you know, around at least Essie and I's age, how GarageBand was like a huge advent of, of the exploration for us, because the first time teenagers now had digital audio to like express ideas in a way that you couldn't. And something that's interesting to me, because you, you know, so much of your stuff that you do is with loop pedals and kind of playing with that medium. This was something that I remember I got first hip to when I was playing like open mics, because I didn't have, we didn't have YouTube, we didn't have like other places where you could see this. I would start playing with people and they'd have it and they'd fuck around with it, whether they're beatboxing or just looping their own, you know, guitar samples or whatever. It was just it was like a new world for me, and I wonder for you, you know, was there anybody like, when did that come into your life? Because it's not like you can just turn on TV and like, up next, the really famous loop pedal guy that we all know and love. There's no like, there's no like template for that. So like, when did you start fucking with that and like, and realizing that could be incorporated into your thing? Because as far as I know, like coming up in the 80s and 90s, it's like, no one's fucking doing that. And actually that technology doesn't even really come into fucking play until like what, the mid late 90s?
Yeah. I mean, the loop, well, it's funny. I came into looping, well, I was exposed to looping through my teacher, Jake Clayton, at Cornish College of the Arts. She was using a Digitech 16-second delay that has like the famous like resampling kind of thing going on, which is like looping. But it was like, it was a delay pedal, but it also looped, you know, but like there's a fine line. And so she would do like kind of back herself up with these atmospherics, really cool ambiences and textures and things like that, and then kind of ride on top of it in these like abstracted ways. And then I think Skerrick, this sick, super badass saxophone player that would experiment with crazy long chains of effects. He had a boomerang pedal, and he would do kind of looping stuff that way. And then I had an RE-101, a Roland RE-101, which is like an analog tape delay from the 70s. And so I was fucking with that a lot, and I was like creating delays. And then I was going on tour with Wayne Horovitz, this kind of well-renowned Northwest. Well, he's from New York originally, but he worked with Bill Frisell. He's a piano player, composer. Wow. He's like a Bill Frisell acolyte. You know, they had bands together or whatever. They grew up together. And so he is just a workhorse, always like doing projects, always hustling, always getting grants and stuff like that. And he would poach players from Cornish. He would like go and watch the Noontime concerts, and he'd be like, oh shit, that bass player, ooh, that drummer. And then he would put together a band. Yeah, he'd be come with me in my world. And so I got to go on tour, European tour, and we did like that traditional jazz route, like Coltrane and Miles would do, like, you know, throughout Europe. And we had this project called the Wayne Horovitz 4+1 Ensemble, which was very kind of awesome situation, where the plus one was this guy, Tucker Martin, who as part of the Martin legacy, who I forget his father's name, but he was a famous country writer. Anyways, he would process sounds using delays and effects and all the analog instruments going through a mixer. So he would do that. And then they'd make sure that they just had two stereo speakers for amplification. So the idea was that instruments were never to be louder than the loudest acoustic instrument on stage.
That's hard.
When was this?
This would have been 1996, I think. 96. Okay.
I mean, this is pretty cutting edge. I mean, this is like still pretty avant-garde kind of shit, it sounds like to me.
Oh, yeah. Very, very cool experimental stuff. But when we went on tour, you know, I was using the 101 for my stuff. I had like a synthesizer, had a Roland W30 and like, well, you know, the RE-101. And I would like do vocals through a telephone mic into it for certain sections of the music, blah, 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 blah. And it was all directed. And then when we went on tour, I was like, I can't bring this 101. The tape, as you know, they're really fussy. They're noisy as fuck, first of all. Secondly, they just have this that's just always there. And then the tape would get gummed up on the heads, and it would just like freeze, and then the torque of the motor would break the tape. So I was like, I can't rely on this, and I can't be like constantly splicing my own tape. So fortunately, like maybe 4 months before we were going on tour, Line 6 came out with the DL4.
Which dude,
that shit changed everything.
I had one of those. That changed everything.
Everything up for me.
I had that. Yep.
Yes.
That changed everything.
And they don't make that shit anymore, man. That shit is like vintage gear now. Those Line 6 old, like the pods and everything, it's like hard to find. Anyway.
Sorry. Oh, that stuff. Yeah. No, the pods are impossible. The Line 6, they still sell, but they're cheaper now. They're more cheaply made, so they tend to break down a lot more frequently. So if you want a good one, you have to get an older wine sick. They look exactly the same, but they're like just
Darren,
older,
I'll sell you mine.
Yeah, nice. I'd fuck with that. Yeah, I just at I'll this point I'm mine. Sentimental about it. It's, you know, the gear that actually isn't good gear anymore, but I just, it's like I was there when I was a kid, so like I just spent a mini fortune trying to fix my Line 6 Flextone 2, which is like not even a great amp, but it was like I used to play with that everywhere. It's like, I love that thing. People are like, why don't you just get a new amp? I'm like, you don't understand. All right, hang on.
No. Emulation, like, you know, when Line 6 came out, that whole idea of emulation was just like, what the, what, huh, what, you can, what? You know, and that's what, that was mind-blowing, you know? And then I was like, oh, does this really sound like a, you know, a 101 or an RE of any,
like,
you know, or an Echoplex or whatever, right? And then you just kind of like, you'd look at the chart that they would give you. There's like a little booklet. You'd go like,
the treasure map.
Okay, so tweeze to 6 o'clock position.
Yep.
We're at this position. And you would like do all the knobs. And then you
I have all my pieces of tape. Yeah.
Yes, it was exactly like the RE101. So I was like, fucking dope. And then that's what we're using. But then I noticed on the 6 o'clock position, there's a loop mode. And I started fucking with that as a scratch pad for my band at the time, Mock Tube. I would just be like, I was thinking about this jam. It's like, and then the band would be like, okay. And it would just be looping. And then they would start like, and then they would, and then as they got it, I would just slowly like lower the volume and then let the band take over. And then I would just be like, yeah, or whatever. It's just over it. And that's how the looping shit started, man.
That's a great way to write songs. That's a great way to write songs.
It's great because you can do it instantly. You know, if you're an instant song person or whatever, you know, or if you hear like a groove right away, like you can just boom, here's the idea. It's looping. You're done.
And it's digital. You don't have to worry about the tape, right? Because that was the...
Don't have to worry about the tape. No.
Yeah, I mean, for our listeners that just zoned out for the past 10 minutes about us talking about digital audio, not even digital, we were talking about analog audio that when I was telling Reggie that there's loop pedals and stuff, I guess as we know them now, they're digital. Like most people, what the Boss, the 505, the RC-505, that's like...
Everything's
the
most electronic now.
Yeah, everything is electronic, it's digital. This is something that didn't happen until sort of early 2000s, late 90s, if you were lucky, if you had like really nice gear. But for a while there, looping shit was a convoluted process. As Reggie was saying, it was basically like kind of a delay pedal, kind of like this boomerang pedal. There's like ways to do it that were not as streamlined as they are now. And what's amazing about, you know, you being able to do this is, yeah, you can harness a lot of instant creativity in a way that like you just fucking couldn't do before. And you can like ride these waves, these inspirational waves that go very quickly. And even what you just know, you know, like boomboxing a sort of a groove, like good, you can have it. I don't have to like sample it in, and like there's a whole like you just have it instantly. And for those of you that are unfamiliar, please go watch any of, I mean, just literally just YouTube Reggie Watts. You've jammed with a number of people. I was just watching this morning the jam that you did with how do you say his last name? Mark
Rebillet.
Rebillet. I figured it was something fancy. Yeah, Mark Rebillet, who I'm a huge admirer of. Flying Lotus as well, who I'm a big admirer of. All these great musicians just fucking with loop pedals, and it's super fun and it's super in the moment. It's a transient piece of performative shit that like you can't bottle, you know? It's just
and
in
for
that
those
moment.
Of you that are listening, our podcast is now called Gearhead.
Yeah, Gearhead.
Yeah, we're on the Gearhead podcast
pedal,
now. Yeah,
Gearhead nerds,
the verge of
Gearhead with SD Heim and Darren Criss.
Here's another question.
We can
given
talk
all the
about
stuff.
Gear all the time. We can talk about gear.
Well,
I can hang.
Gear's like a nerdy thing.
I can hang.
I
can.
Essie, you are a fucking gear. Like you, gear
I
comes
gear
to you
head.
Because they want you to use. Like the gear says, "Please use me, Essie Heim." Your sisters
well,
want
you know what?
Like
the. I mean, I'm obsessed with gear. I'm obsessed with vintage gear, and one of the first times we were interviewed by a British. We were in London. And we were interviewed by a British periodical, and one of the questions was, if you had like $1 million, if you got $1 million tomorrow, what would you spend it on? And I said gear.
Oh, this is a great story.
And not knowing that in the UK, gear is drugs.
Propaganda.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, it's specifically, well, in the United States, it's known for heroin. But yes, you're right. In the UK, it's kind of everything.
Yeah. Top gear, mate.
Or but no, like, that's not true. Yeah. I was thinking of a rig. Yeah, rig is different. Rig is heroin. Gear is...
Yeah. I think gear specifically is like cocaine.
Right. Yes, you're right.
There's there's actually a whole lot of fun drug like parlance in the UK, as they tend to have.
They're the best.
Posh Charles. Posh Charles, I've heard is cocaine.
What's Posh Charles?
Oh.
Posh Charles is cocaine, but because of the way these things become so individualized locally, so if Posh Charles is cocaine, then it's like, oh, you got to get some proper chucky. You got some proper chuck, bruv.
Right, it just keeps getting shorter and shorter
and more, you know, nuanced, but that's I've heard it. I've also heard, I don't know enough about European football, much less English football players, but apparently, and I all get this from my, I have some friends of mine who have kids who are like teenagers, and so I was like, give me the fun, like, what do the kids say?
Yeah, what are the kids saying?
This is already outdated. They were saying, okay, so this is Cockney rhyme slang.
Okay.
Evidently, and this may have just been between these two boys. Like this is already outdated and inaccessible.
I love this shit. Give it to me.
Okay, so there's a footballer named Gary Ablett. Okay. Ablett rhymes with tablet,
yep.
Which presumably would be for some sort of tablet form party drug.
Yes.
And so it's like, oh, mate, we got to school some Gary. We need some Gary. Some Gary Ablett.
Tablet.
And I'm like, how do you, trying to explain that? It's just the etymology. It's like the breadcrumbs go too far back. That, like, how could you possibly know what they're talking about? But I appreciated the sort of cleverness of that.
I have some of my own. I have one, which is when like something's finalized or you agree on something, I say crocodile.
Why?
Because it's a Crocodile Dundee. Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah, we Dundee. Is it all Dundee? We Crocodile.
Yeah, Dundee. And then Crocodile.
I love that.
Sometimes I say that.
Reggie, that's excellent.
Thanks. Yeah, there's another one where, what is it? Crocodile Dundee. And then, I'll think of it. But there's another one. It's just like, abstract.
Yo, guys, this shit's dope, man. I love being here, man. Fucking two turntables and a microphone.
This is where it's at.
Say that.
Like, this is where it's at.
It's where it's at, man.
Yeah.
Oh, man, it's the best. Two turntables and a microphone, man.
Getting the hang of it.
Oh, here's another one, Calrissian. For like, oh, that person's being so unpredictable. Yeah, Rando. Calrissian.
Wait,
Lando,
I don't know. What is that?
this is a Star Wars reference. Lando Calrissian.
Star Wars reference.
Oh, yeah.
Lando Calrissian, and you're being random, so it's Rando Calrissian. Sometimes I'll say Rando Calrissian, but then if my friends know that, then I'll just say Calrissian.
That is great. Yeah, if you're at the party, I don't know. It's like, it's fun, man. It's just a lot of Calrissians going on. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's like, oh, right. What?
yeah, sure, totally. And then you're like, I gotta get out of here.
My dad might have been the purveyor of this trend because my father, for years, would sign everything, like sign cards, sign emails, like, and I mean, and I feel like, Reggie, I feel like you met my dad.
I might have.
Did you meet my dad on the road? I think you met my dad. My dad is like, is an immigrant, like, English is a second language. English is an eighth language. Like, he learned so many different languages before he ever learned English.
We all have immigrant parents, right? We're all first generationers, right?
First gen.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
That's true.
All right. Cool club. Mom. Anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool club.
Yeah, yeah. Cool.
All right. I want to ask more about that because I think it's so interesting. But my dad would always sign things Nike.
Really?
And I never under. I thought it was. Like, in a different language, it meant something. Because Nike already, I mean, it's a shoe brand, but it was always, like, a weird word. I was like, it's Greek, right? It's, like, the Greek name for flight, right?
Yeah, the goddess of something.
Goddess of flight.
There's a goddess.
The goddess of Air Jordans. Yeah.
Yes, the goddess of Air Force One.
Yeah. Yes, the Air Force One.
So I, like, and then
she's on
years,
the front of the plane.
It was, like, one of those things where, you know, it's like the thing that you're like one of your parents just do and it's just part of their personality. But then a couple years ago, I finally asked my dad, like, Dad, what is Nike? Like, what does Nike mean? And he was like, oh, it means just do it.
English as an eighth language. I get it.
Just do it.
Just
Wait,
do
he would
it.
Sign like. Sign on what? Like legal
no, like,
documents?
Like happy birthday, Esty. I love you very much, Nike.
Goddess of victory.
Just do it. Goddess of
like
victory,
just do it. Like you can do it.
Slogan.
Yes. Like I like you can do it. Like I love you. You can do it. Like it was like a way for him to just like encourage me. But I never understood what it meant.
That is amazing. That really is amazing. That's pretty fantastic.
And also that he never cared to like explain it to you. This
I
is
love
very
that.
True.
I love that.
Yeah.
He's like, everyone will get it.
Yeah, they know.
It's like, she knows what that means.
I don't know if it's a broad generalization, but I have a lot of same things with like my, you know, second language. My mom will say things often where I know she's making an assumption about people's understanding of the English language. That is, there's actually a huge incongruity between most people, most people's uses of English and her use of English, where she'll say stuff and I'm like, I do not think this word means what you think it means. I don't know if it's consistent with all of you guys, but it's a very sweet thing that I think if you have parents whose first language was something else, it kind of happens a lot. And you only know it as their kid, where you can, like, there's other people in the room. You're like, oh,
you have to translate. Yeah.
Yeah. She's very happy that you're
all
here.
All the time.
Yes.
All the time. Yeah. Yeah.
Wait,
yeah,
Richie, where's your mom from?
Your mom's French? Yeah.
My mom's from France. Yeah. From the north of France in the Lorraine. But she never lost her accent at all. Like I had a friend who lived in Cutbank, which is like an hour and 45 away from Great Falls, Montana. And his name was Didier and his mother was French. But for some reason, no accent from France, like just some tiny little words like her R's a little bit, but a hardcore, just flat American accent. It was amazing. My mom didn't change since like she moved here in 1976. It's just, you know, she's always like, she says instead of matter of fact, she says manny fact.
Oh,
and so people are
like
just
like a book, a compilation of male nannies that have compiled a bunch of facts for you. Oh yes, this is a manny fact number one. Manny fact.
Yes, totally. It's a manny fact. Sorry, we pulled over your ship. We're gonna have to take a look at its manifest to make sure to hold the cargo.
That's great, man. I mean, I feel like accents, because I too am a mimic. I think Essie's a mimic too. We like when I hear. I'm a self-proclaimed linguophile. I love accents. I love regional accents. I love the history of accents and the culture of accents and why they happen. And you know, through varying different languages. I know you and I speak a couple different languages, Reggie. There's like a lot of things that I like to notice. I think it has a lot to do with my love of mimicry. I think it has to also come with the having a good ear.
Yep.
Some people have it and they can, I always say this, like some people can see a face, they can draw it instantly. That's fucking magic to me. If you speak a certain way, I can match it. I'm not saying it's going to be perfect, but I will give it like, you know, a good college try out of the gate. So your mom, do you get your ear from your mom or your dad? Because I would believe that if your mom still has her accent, she's not maybe hearing the thing that she needed to sort of assimilate to sonically. Whereas if you put me in France long enough, I wouldn't be able to help myself but to sound like the community I was around to eliminate my accent. So was your dad the music guy? Like, where's that ear come from, man? Because you have a fucking insane ear.
I have no idea. My dad didn't really do accents. He wasn't really he had a good sense of humor. He wasn't really funny. My mom was like zany, but not like funny to be funny. You know, like just more like she knows she's just zany, you know? And my dad, it's like, I really don't know where it comes. I think it's because I was born, you know, I was born in Germany and probably heard German people talking around when my mom would, you know, be pushing me around for the first year. And then 3 years after that, we were in Italy for a little bit and then Spain for 2 years until I was four. And then, you know, my mom was speaking French and my dad speaking English and then moving to Montana and, you know, and then growing up around Montana and then going back some summers to Cleveland, Ohio and the black community and then like going to France to visit my relatives in the north of France. I think all of that exposure to sounds and language and probably just a predisposition for loving, like I see something that I love, I see or hear something that I love, I'm like, oh, it's like this. Oh yeah, I love it so much. It's like this. Yeah, how can I do that? And just being totally fascinated with trying to get it, you know? And then same thing with music too. Like I would mimic singers, like the way they would sound. If it was Olivia Newton-John, I would be like, how can, not only would I get the notes, but I would try to get the softness of her vocal tone or the raspiness.
Yep.
Yeah. All of that stuff. So I was just like, sonically, I was very interested. And then when Michael Winslow came along, you know, in the Police Academy movies, I was like, oh shit, and you can mimic like, I mean, I was doing spaceship sounds and lasers, of course, but like, he was doing like a car getting a flat tire on the road, you know, fooling someone and thinking they're flat, they have a flat tire, or like sounding like someone moving between train cars, you know, like, like that kind of shit. I was like, what the fuck?
And beeps, so
I
started, sweeps and the creeps.
Yeah. That's kind of where all of that, it kind of, I think it was all of that stuff.
Well, that's music too, right?
What a cool, like,
I think when you're good at music,
exactly.
When you're good at music, well, like the three of us at least.
Yes.
When you're good at that, day. When you're good at that good music day. Thing, I think that's part of our job is to have the ear that recognizes what makes it the thing that it is, right? And to be able to then recreate that, right? And I think that's why music...
Or create something that fits like with it. I think understanding like the structure and go, okay, you're at this part of the layer cake. I know that part, so I'm going to be at this part of the layer cake to elevate or compliment or hold you down. It's like knowing, it's like there's a lot of, it's mimicry, it's performance, it's that thing I do, hey, it's all connected, all right.
I agree. But I think, and I don't know if this goes back to what Reggie was saying about memorization. I hate memorization too. And I think that's also what I hated about learning languages was memorizing all the different, what are they called? Not conjunctives. What are they called?
Oh, just all the grammar and all the shit?
Yeah, but it's called something, and whatever. My Spanish teacher will kill me, will call me, probably, or at least Facebook me if I don't get this right. Conjunctive sounds like an eye disease. It's not that.
Conjugation.
There we go.
Conjugation.
Oh, there we go.
Terrence,
conjugation.
The voice of God.
Thank you. Conjugations.
Thank you.
Yeah, conjunctive sounds like conjunctivitis, which I think is pink eye.
No, we don't go
We're
there.
Not going to go there today.
Yeah, so when you're congregating your verbs.
I hate it. I hate it. And that's my biggest pet peeve with learning languages. I think that the easier thing to do is just to go to the country itself, if you can, if you're lucky enough to be able to get there, and then just stay there and, you know.
I was terrible at French. I took French in high school and I thought it would be a breeze because I didn't write French. I only spoke it. So, and I could understand it. So, you know, so essentially I learned French by ear.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I got into the class, like the beginning French, that was pretty easy because it matched what I knew. I could, you know, I was like, oh, I know how to say that. Oh, I know why you'd say that. But then as soon as we started getting to deeper grammatics and things like that, and feminine, masculine, all that shit, I was like, I can't do it. And I passed, but she was just nice, you know, but I just couldn't do it. It's like, I still can't write French. I mean, I can read it for the most part, but I can't.
Dude, talk about one of the most dissonant relationships between written and spoken languages. France has a huge illiteracy problem because you have this thing that many people can speak. It's like fucking so hard to figure out these rules. And like, it's like, here's a 9-letter word, you pronounce two of the syllables.
Right.
You pronounce three of the letters. Those other ones, that's just a bonus round to
it's decoration.
It's just decoration. Looks cool on a street sign.
It looks really
other
cool.
Than that, don't pronounce it.
Wait, Darren,
apostrophe.
Darren, can you read Japanese?
It depends. Like childish Japanese. There's three alphabets. I won't get into the intricacies of it, but there are basic forms of it that yes, I could get by, but definitely not like a newspaper. You know, I think basic Japanese you'd see on t-shirts in like places in the United States. Yes, because they're like common things, but like a Japanese novel, absolutely not. Also because kanji is like a whole other thing. It's like a lifetime of studying.
We don't need to be able to read.
Yeah, it's all good.
No, Romaji is good enough.
Yeah, Romaji is where emojis is all we need, really, if I'm being honest with you.
I can read those.
It's the only G I need to jive with. Now, Reggie...
Emojis.
That sounds so
emoji.
So terrifying.
Oh, I love, you know, my favorite artist is Emoji Heap.
I love that.
That is so good.
You know
good.
We
There's
love
gotta
puns
be somebody.
On this show.
I feel like we're going to see Emoji Heap in the middle of the Lollapalooza bracket in like 2 years.
Yeah, totally.
It's going to be, I don't know what the group is going to be. It'll be like two dudes from like, I don't know. I want to say like a guy from Thailand and a dude from like Texas. They met at Juilliard, started an electropop group, and they got a really good sync with the new Nissan commercial.
Yeah,
and they are now in the middle. They're playing the Gobi stage at Coachella.
They're huge on TikTok. There.
I'll leave early, but I'll show up for a little bit. Oh, emoji heap. Emoji heap.
Emoji heap. She's the best. Her magic gloves.
Yeah, so gloves. So I was going to say, because we didn't really get into Corden, I'm interested what happens when, you know, a lot of things we're talking about, arguably, I don't know if this is true, but, you know, I subscribe, I think Essie subscribes, you subscribe to perhaps things that might be associated with more with subcultural nerdy things, absurdist humor, things that aren't immediately associated with mainstream interest. Not saying that it's for better or for worse. It's not like a commentary on people's tastes. It's just an objective thing I've noticed is, you know, if you're the guy that grows up loving Python and Weird Al,
yeah,
we're the fun outsiders that enjoy nerdy, weird shit. And what's interesting is when people in our position get put into a mainstream spotlight, and now you have a platform to kind of, what's what I'm looking for? Be the conduit between said subcultural interests and mainstream focus. And I'm wondering for you, has this been a weird thing? Because now that you are in this insane, insanely visible daily, nightly exposure machine, which is a wonderful thing. Do you find yourself being like, oh man, do you have to recalibrate your sense of what you want to put out? Or does it excite you? Is there a pressure to that? Because it's a strange thing. You know, Esty can attest to this. You girls. Playing with your sisters, having fun. But all of a sudden, you get put on this international stage, and you're like, well, fuck, now I got to be that version of myself. Mm-hmm. Like, this was just for me and my friends, or me and my family, and now I got to be this version of somebody else that, like, actually has nothing to do with me. And I can relate to that, too. You know, like, Lee was a thing where I'm like, oh, I guess I got to be that dude, but I've just been this nerd on my keyboard for my whole life. So, anyway, way too long of a setup. You know, has that experience been have you had to reconsider anything? Has it been an empowering thing? Has there been any obstacles to it, I guess? Because I was thrilled when you got that job, because I was a big Reggie fan. I'd know James from the Broadway world, and I was like, oh, that's so cool. That's a great look for James.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, thanks. I mean, I didn't really have to adjust too much. I mean, I just looked at it as an opportunity to do more of the things that I wanted to do. And I think, thankfully, I was, you know, living out loud long enough that I think people were, like, not really worried. You know, like, I mean, if someone was like, oh, you got that gig, I bet you, let's see how he changes. You know, like,
I didn't mean to insinuate that. I feel like that's what came out. I didn't mean that.
No, but that does happen, though. So you're right in, you know, in projecting that possibility. It's like, it's just that for me, I wondered about that, of course, but, I didn't really, I mean, because they let me do what I wanted to do, you know, and it's like, for me, it's like, I just had to set the conditions, you know, and just go like, here's what I do. And here's what would be the best way to utilize what I do. And then they allowed me to do it. So I didn't really have that wasn't really an issue, but I will say the first time that I saw Haim on stage, I saw Haim playing any scale of the show, because they play like they're playing a fucking, like Red Rocks, you know what I mean? Like they play like Zeppelin, you know what I mean?
Like amen.
That's how, as soon as I saw him, I was like, what the fuck is happening right now? I was like, they're like, you guys are already there. Like, you're already like looking above the 50,000 people, you know what I mean? Like, so
thank you.
I just had to mention that. Cause,
thank
cause
you. I appreciate that. So I think that puts a bow on it. We are friends. We can be friends.
Yeah, I think finally.
Yeah.
We fucking, that we're was, friends. This is all this was.
Yeah, we're friends.
We didn't even record this. This was just a test to see.
Yeah, we're friends.
If you guys could get along.
Well, that's my.
Plus, I will say, not just to like, oh, go ahead. Go
no,
ahead.
I was going to say, are you recording music right now? Are you like planning to put out maybe a song or a record or something?
Whatever you can talk about.
If you can't,
it's really top secret.
I'm curious.
Really top secret,
I don't know. Like, you know.
No, no. Well, I mean, I have this project called Video Games, and we basically just do these like really cool pop songs that are really awesome. And it's me and my brother. And we no, just
wow, I was gonna say, no, keep it in the family. I know that well. Keep that it in the family.
I was like, this is very, very eerily similar.
Coming for my spot, Reggie Watts? Coming for our spot?
Yeah, thanks, man.
Damn, okay.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I recorded with Mark Rebier the 2 weeks before we recorded at Bedrock Studios, and I was just trying to basically separate all the loops and shit so we can actually mix it properly. It was just kind of an experiment. So we have like an hour and a half of music there that we might fuck with. And then today I'm recording with this guy, Tyler Hammond, who's this kind of 23-year-old jazz prodigy drummer.
Cool. He's a drummer.
Just insane. Yeah, he's a drummer. He's sick. He looks like, I swear to God, he looks like a young Kevin Bacon.
Whoa.
He looks like he could play Kevin Bacon at like 19. You know what I mean? Like it's crazy. And he makes the weirdest facial expressions when he's playing. He's having so much fun. But anyways, so I'm doing that, and then I'm recording music with Wahada, my electronic music project with John Tejada. And we have a single coming out on Brain Feeder soon. And it's actually gonna be, I guess, kind of an EP. It's like three songs, three tracks.
That's so cool. I love Brain Feeder. Brain Feeder's like such, it's the coolest label.
Yeah.
Thundercat's on that label.
I don't know if COVID is still, I know people are starting to perform again. Essie's got some gigs lined up. You're playing Zebulon in Frogtown, right? For like a weekly thing there or a monthly thing?
Yeah, we had a kind of bi-monthly or kind of monthly. It was kind of a little random, but it was like kind of a residency, yeah, for a little while. We did El Cid for a really long time.
Yeah, I was going to say El Cid you were at for a while. I remember that.
We were for a long time. Yeah, that was we were doing every week for a year, which was insane.
That's fun. But I just wanted That's so fun. Are you doing it again?
I wanted to get the chemistry. I think we're going to do some more gigs for sure. I want to do more cool like live shows with musicians jamming, but have it recorded really well. Have everything, all the tracks individuated, and then have an audience to like see it and then mix it and just like do it. And then use that and then give that for different producers. Like I've been working with Kenny Beats a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And he's such a fast, awesome mega producer. And he also, by the way, if you want someone that knows how to record drums.
Yeah.
That dude, he played me. Oh my gosh. You guys are going to freak out.
Down.
I don't know. Do you know Idols?
Yeah.
Oh, the band Idols. Okay.
I love Idols.
Oh shit. Okay.
They're playing Pappy and Harriet's on Halloween and I can't make it. And I was like, oh, that would be fucking fun. They are incredible.
So they're a recent find for me. I ran into their music like a year ago. But if you're a fan of them, you are going to lose your shit when you hear the new album that Kenny Beats produced.
Oh shit.
I've never heard drums sound as good as they've sounded. I mean, it sounds holographic.
Whoa.
It's just raw.
That's a great adjective.
He didn't do any processing. It was all,
just the way
it was
he
all,
mic'd
I mean,
it.
He did like compression work.
Right.
The way he mic'd it. And he, you know, he said, I've been working on this technique for like a year and a half.
Damn.
And I think I really nailed it. And it is the most grossest, like destructive.
Filthy. Dirty ass. I mean, that's that
so
kind of
dirty.
Band, man.
And it's just exactly what I love. It's like right on the edge of punk. It's a punk like, it's punk hardcore, whatever
it's
you
like
call
woke.
It. Like
it's like woke post punk shit because they're singing about some hard fucking stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, they're just
cool.
Like human nature and like, you know, all the pitfalls that we fall into as human beings and power dynamics and all that shit. And it sounds. It's just lethal. I heard that and I was jazzed for like weeks and weeks and weeks. And then when we would work together, I always have him play another song for me just so I'd get hyped. You're going to freak.
I can't wait. I'm going to give that
That's
a
my
listen.
Working out music.
Yes.
Yeah. Idols are great. And I would encourage our listeners for any of the other bands that we mentioned. We mentioned Marc Rebillier. Is that how you say him?
Think of the L
Rebillier?
As yeah. So yeah. Rebillier.
Rebier, excuse me, Marc Rebier, who's a fabulous multi-instrumentalist, and he's a wonderful producer, and so he's got a lot of cool stuff. I follow all his shit on Instagram. A lot of cool musicians, especially for those of you that are listening that may not necessarily play music or be like a gearhead or anything. These are really great recommendations. I hope you can dig them.
Check out Brain Feeder. Check out everything on Brain
Check
Feeder.
Check out Brain Feeder.
Everything on Brain Feeder.
Anything.
check out computer games. If you get a chance.
Computer games is so good, man. You got to listen to anybody out there. Really, it's really good. I was like,
thank you. I don't know if Esty knows this. You know, I had like a band with my brother called Computer Games.
No.
We did like pop synth shit.
No.
Yeah, yeah. That's it was a fun chapter. We still want to
really
keep going,
good.
But you know, daddy's busy.
Oh yeah, daddy's busy doing
acting.
The side gig. Yeah.
Dude, you are such a joy, and I'm so glad you've always been so good to me anytime I invite you to fun stuff. It's all a projection of me. Just what you said about Doja Cat is honestly what I say about you. You're a guy that does it all. You have such a unique fingerprint on what you do, and I love that you found a way. And I'm glad that the spotlight found you, at least on Corden, for people in the mainstream to see you at your fullest. I think it's cool that you and Esty, you guys have never changed what you've done. It's just that everyone else's kaleidoscope has shifted into an angle where it now gets to see you clearly. And that makes me so fucking happy as a super fan, because then you go, I like this thing. This thing is cool. And then when you see other people liking it, you're like, thank God, I'm not fucking crazy. Like, this is a great thing. So thank you for sharing that with us
with
the world and being on our podcast, man. We really appreciate it. You're such an inspiration to me, man.
You really are, Reggie. And I'm so glad I got to meet you all those years ago. And I think, isn't the last time I saw you at that Julian concert?
Was that the last time
I saw you?
Yeah, at Voids.
It was like
the Voids.
Outdoor.
Were you at the Voids?
Yeah, it was the Voids.
Oh, yeah.
It's like an outdoor art.
Behind the art gallery.
Yes.
1983 or whatever.
It was so many years ago. Yeah, it was 1983. Yeah. It was 3 years before I was born. Yeah, it was a long time ago.
That's so true. Yeah, it was a long time ago.
Yeah, we'll let you go, man. Thank you for being here.
Thanks.
And I can't wait to see you around campus again, around all the familiar places. See you
at
Idol
Show. Yeah, of course, at the quad.
Fuck yeah. Around the quad, dude.
Oh, shit. Are you kidding?
I can't wait. All right, okay. Take care, Reg. Thanks for being with us, man.
Hey, matane.
Matane, matane, arigatou gozaimashita.
Matane, ohayou.
That Thing I Do is a presentation of Cadence 13 Studios.
If you like the show, which I know you do, please be sure to like us, follow us, and leave a glowing review.
Thank you for listening to our show. We'll see you next time.